from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In a historic ruling on Monday, a California judge in Alameda Superior Court, for the first time in the state's history, handed down a decision that would require a change of zoning to accommodate new housing. The ruling applies to the city of Pleasanton in the East Bay, where a housing cap was approved by voters back in 1996 to limit growth and congestion by establishing a cap of 29,000 units. The cap was designed to serve as a future planning benchmark. The court ordered the city to rezone enough land to meet its portion of the state required affordable housing in the region and to meet the number that complies with the number set by ABAG, Association of Bay Area Governments. This half hour, we want to discuss that ruling, which may be appealed by the city, and we want to talk about what it will mean. And joining us first is John King, who had an article about this in today's San Francisco Chronicle, who writes for the Chronicle. And good morning, John King.
Hi, Michael.
Glad to have you here. You know, we were looking at this and thinking it really is a big news story, and reading your column convinced me even more, because you really do see it having serious possible impact.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You can never really do a crystal ball prediction on the basis of one court decision, especially at a county level. But this decision is the sort of thing that if it becomes kind of a precedent that gets used to press lawsuits and then used by judges to find in favor of housing advocates and anti-sprawl advocates, it really could start to reshape the Californian landscape.
And in fact, already there's some surmising or speculation that that may be in the offing.
We'll see what happens. I mean, the flip side to this is I can't imagine suburban communities that have resisted what they see as urban development for decades suddenly going along with a judge who tells them, I know what's best for you, and I have this formula for housing from the State Department of Finance, and so you better find room for 2,000 more housing units. And it's the kind of thing you could imagine people pressing, you know, Sacramento or using initiatives to try and somehow unhinge it.
Well, the judge is saying that state law essentially trumps local law, but what if the local community doesn't have, say, the sewage for more affordable housing or can't accommodate
it? That's where this gets so interesting and complex. One city that fell very short of the recent measurements is Redwood City in San Mateo County. Redwood City right now, the city leaders are very interested in the idea of taking about 1,300 acres of salt ponds, letting half be developed at high density, and then the developer would restore the other half as bay wetlands.
Yeah, we did a whole hour on that.
Okay, well, you know the flip side, which is how on earth can you desecrate the thing that gives the region its identity? How can you do this kind of environmental outrage? So there's this, the judge's decision, which absolutely left no room for hedging. It was a very succinct and pointed ruling, says, listen, you have zoning rights, but your zoning rights have to acknowledge regional needs. Pleasanton, you didn't do it. Lots of communities would say, yeah, but we didn't do it for a good reason.
Well, Pleasanton, they're saying it messes up their whole traffic system plan, for example.
Exactly, to which the judge would say and the advocates would say, well, why don't you plan for the population you should have? I think what really got the judge's gall, and I'm sure this was talked about in the first half hour, the notion of a population cap. At the same time, you are opening the floodgates to all sorts of commercial growth. Is just, there's a brazenness to it that really makes this the perfect example to go after to set a precedent.
And we have an economic crisis now.
The state rules are explicit. You have to make room for the housing. They don't say the housing has to be built, because obviously if you rezoned Pleasanton to allow a bunch of 30-story towers, which I don't think is in the works on the next city council meeting, if no one's going to build them, they're not going to be built. What the state wants is for you to show, we have zoning that allows for growth, and we have a development process that acknowledges it can happen.
Well, we invited the mayor of Pleasanton, the current mayor of Pleasanton, Jennifer Hosterman, but she had a prior commitment and was unable to join us. So we have Tom Pico, who is former mayor of Pleasanton and was on the city council. We'll say good morning to you, Tom Pico.
Good morning.
And member of the city council from 1992 to 2000 and chair of the Alameda County Congestion Management Agency. We also have Richard Marcantonio with us, who is managing attorney at Public Advocates. That's a nonprofit law firm and advocacy organization. And Richard Marcantonio was lead attorney for the plaintiffs in this Pleasanton case, which Jerry Brown, as attorney general, also joined in. And we welcome you to the program.
Thank you. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Actually, let me begin with you, if I may, here and get why this was so necessary from your point of view. I guess it just wasn't enough affordable housing and people were having a commute, thousands and thousands of people having a commute and live outside of Pleasanton.
Well, the immediate situation in Pleasanton was just that. There are 40,000 people who commute to jobs in Pleasanton. And the there were two things that were causing a problem about that. First was there were two things that were making it impossible for those people and their families to actually live in that community. One was the housing cap, which set, and this is a really quite an extreme and unusual local measure, but the cap set an absolute outer limit on how many housing units the city would allow to exist within its borders. The second thing, however, is of much broader concern, and that is that the city had failed for, well, as of this point, it's almost 6 years to do what we were just talking about, that to make the sites actually zoned in order to accommodate high density residential housing, so that lower income housing could be built by willing developers.
But Tom Pico, who, by the way, Tom Pico is in favor of the housing cap, the city never, as I understand it, rejected a development plan because of the housing cap.
I'm not sure which what development plan you're talking about that would have been rejected.
Any development plan, as far as
there has not been a development plan in Pleasanton since I was on the city council, starting from 1992 through 2004. Was not ultimately approved, except for one project that was a 40-unit project that was referenced by the people of Pleasanton. I wish I could say that, as having been a slow growth advocate and mayor, that we really made a significant difference. But in actuality, we did. And for every project that wanted to be developed, got developed. It might not have been developed exactly the way the landowner, property owner wanted, but we did have approvals.
And for the record, for full disclosure, you're involved in a development project as an advisor now, are you not?
No, I'm not at this point in time. I was in the past, but at this point in time, I have absolutely no financial interest in any development proposal before the city of Pleasanton or any other place. So, and I also wanted to just make it real clear that I'm speaking on behalf of myself as a former mayor, and not at all representing the position of the city of Pleasanton. I think that's important to state.
Well, what do you, as an individual, have to say about what critics are saying, which is that these housing caps promote sprawl?
That they promote sprawl. I think it's just the opposite in our city. It protects the sustainability of our city, and that's really the main issue that we're fighting for here, is to create a city of planned progress, which is our city's motto, and to have a city that ultimately is going to be sustainable at build out. And one of the things that few people really recognize is that the city of Pleasanton is almost at build out right now. And one of the major issues is that we are having an extremely difficult time, at least we were when I was mayor, and I know they still are now, trying to find and locate parcels that would be suitable for this type of development.
It's your feeling that maybe decisions should be made on the basis of sub-regionality as opposed to doing it city by city.
I think that you've hit on a real major issue for us, because, I know that I and a lot of the other members of the former city councils and present city council really feel quite strongly that the regional housing needs requirements are the allocation method and formulas are seriously flawed. And I'll give you one example, which I think is the best example of it. You know, the city of Pleasanton, if you drive down the 580 freeway, on one side of the freeway to the north, we have the city of Dublin and city limits, and to the south, we have Pleasanton. From Foothill Road all the way out to El Charro Road, Fallon Road, along the 580 freeway, the common city limit border with the city of Dublin. If you drive through there, you'll notice that on the Pleasanton side of the freeway, it's continuous commercial business kinds of development, corporate headquarters, offices, etc. And on the Dublin side of the freeway, it's continuous strip of retail and high-density housing. You know, the Pleasanton has a significant number of jobs that are developed in the commercial area, but we get absolutely no credit for meeting any of the housing needs for those jobs for all of the intense high-density development that's occurring on the other side of the freeway from us. And I think that that's crazy. You know, if the city of Dublin, Pleasanton, and Livermore, if the cities were to have been aggregated into one city the size of the city of Concord, we wouldn't have any issues related to, you know, jobs, housing, balance type issues. You know, and the other issue is that, you know, there's a strong encouragement for transit-oriented development. And we're fortunate that we have a BART station, and we're going to have another BART station shortly in the freeway median of the 580 freeway. And, you know, we bring thousands and thousands of people to work to jobs here in the city of Pleasanton on BART, and we get absolutely no credit for them. In fact, we get penalized for that in the judge's order. And it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, we should not be penalized for trying to, you know, encourage, you know, high density or commercial development and high density residential development, and not being given credit for you know, things like BART. I mean, the allocations are totally unreasonable. We have said so for years. The formula is flawed, and you know, we our arguments fall on deaf ears.
Well, Tom Pico again is a former mayor of Pleasanton. I don't think they fall on deaf ears as far as you're concerned, do they, Richard Marcantonio? In fact, didn't you say that you tried to work with the city before filing the suit, but they fought it all the way?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we met with the city and gave them ample opportunity to do the right thing months before we brought suit. I'd like to address some of the points that the former mayor's making. He says that the cap doesn't promote sprawl. You see, what he's talking about is taking a purely within the Pleasanton borders look at the world. What we really have to look at is that the nine-county Bay Area is a metropolitan region that is really an integrated job market, an integrated housing market. It's not just the city of Pleasanton that's a fiefdom unto itself. And again, while the city does, you know, while individual cities have certain powers over their land use, as the court pointed out, it's been the law in California for decades that power comes with the responsibility to be a team player, to meet your fair share of the region's housing needs. And nobody disagrees about what the region's housing needs are. There are quibbles about whether those are allocated in a fair way. And there will always be quibbles because everybody's in favor of affordable housing, and yet many cities are refusing to do it. There's a number of reasons. One reason,
not only cities but counties. In fact, Marin County
cities
doesn't.
And counties,
Marin County
right.
Doesn't have affordable housing allocations, do they?
Counties do for the unincorporated land in the county. Yeah. So all the local jurisdictions, there's, 110 local jurisdictions in the Bay Area, something like that. They each have an allocation, and it's allocated at four different income levels, and very low income is the lowest of those. People think that means poverty. It actually means for a family of four, in many places, earning $40,000 a year. So these are, you know, school teachers and firefighters and all sorts of essential public servants. And yet we're not housing them in the cities that they serve. So, when cities are turning away development, it's not usually because of lack of water or lack of land. Pleasanton is not built out. Many, many cities talk about build out, but it's an artificial number that they place, that they put in their general plan and say, this is how, this is the ideal size of our city.
Richard, let me intervene here because I want to actually bring our listeners in, and I know that there are many people who have questions and comments about this issue and concerns, so let me give out the number and invite those of you listening to join us. You can do that now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Again, the phone number for you to call if you'd like to join the program, 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org. Or you can post a comment on our website simply by visiting kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. Before I go to callers, I want to go back to John King. What about sprawl, John King?
My apologies. I'm on the phone, so I've been trying to get in. I want to give an example from Pleasanton that I think addresses a reason this is becoming such an issue now and could become a much wider statewide issue. Along 580, as former Mayor Pico was talking about, there is a large stretch of land south of 680. The city of San Francisco had 510 surplus acres there, right on the freeway, poised between the two of the BART stations in the extension out toward Livermore. In the late 1980s, it proposed 3,300 housing units there. Pleasanton did not like the idea. It was seen as a real transit-friendly, high levels of affordable housing land use approach. The Alameda County eventually approved it 2,500 units. The city of Pleasanton, when it finally allowed it to go through in 2000, it was reduced to 581 housing units. So here's an example of how, on the one hand, yes, Pleasanton approved housing. On the other hand, Pleasanton approved 2,000 housing units less than what the county itself had given the okay for a few years earlier. So it's when everything gets whittled down that way that you have sprawl.
All right. I'm going to go to our callers. Before I do, though, a couple of quick emails. Dan from San Rafael writes, Pleasanton is a city that works, safe, good schools, competent government. Why force it to build low-income housing that will make the city less safe and more like Oakland? And Chris from San Jose says, what hubris. We have a city that planned to receive all the commercial income without having to support the workers. And let's go to Mark in Union City as our first caller. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Well, I just want to point out that the courts are also taking away the tools for creating affordable housing. You know, the inclusionary housing ordinance are now illegal for rental property. And when you build affordable housing as 100% affordable, the nonprofits have to compete very hard to get tax credits to support that housing. And then the city or the redevelopment agency has to put in additional millions of dollars to make that happen. Just, for example, in Union City, affordable housing at 75 units per acre costs $420,000 per unit to build. And I further want to point out that Housing and Community Development is asking through the housing element even more affordable housing beyond what's already been funded and is requesting that market rate housing be rezoned to accommodate more affordable housing and to actually reduce the densities. But it makes sense to have higher densities around a BART station. And so there are, within the state government, there are several contradictory orders that are being given out to the local community.
I thank you for those points and appreciate hearing from you. We'll hear from some more of our listeners in just a moment. I just wanted to mention, though, that high-density housing has been treated in California as a kind of proxy for low-income. Isn't that right, John King?
It does in some sense, although what you're seeing more and more is the notion of high-density housing that really touches on all income levels, the kind of things like transit villages, what former Mayor Pico talked about with kind of clustering housing near BART stations. You know, nobody builds housing projects like you saw in the 1950s anymore. That just isn't done.
And let's go to another caller up in Petaluma, Paul. And interesting hearing from Petaluma where they limit the permit numbers. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a comment and a quick question. Here in Petaluma, it's a community here. We're struggling sort of pulling in two different directions here. We have the smart train possibly coming through here in a few years. And, you know, we're looking down the barrel of over 800,000 square feet of big box strip mall development that we're trying to fight off. We're trying to get these smart codes, you know, higher density, transit-oriented design project implemented here. And it's been a real battle for a few years now against these big box developers. My question is...
well, these big box developers bring in income, don't they? I mean, they bring in tax revenue. That's the concern, obviously.
Well, the jury's still out on that one. I mean, it has the perception, the appearance of economic development.
Well, it provides jobs, and it does, and they do provide tax revenue. There's no question.
Bad jobs, and the tax revenue is questionable because these projects. There are studies that show that these projects cost communities more than they actually bring in. Believe it or not. But my question is, as far as projects like in Pleasanton, if these projects, if there's somehow that they could require that, or maybe they're implementing these concepts, the smart codes principles, higher density, but also designing the community so it's actually, you know, functional for people to, have these, you know, amenities and shopping and get to places in the area.
Well, that's what smart growth was always supposed to be about, Tom Pico. But it started back there in 1992 when you were sitting on the city council, didn't you?
I was a board member for 9 years of the local government commission, which, you know, was the establisher of the Iwani principles for smart growth, and have been a real advocate for smart growth and affordable housing. I'd like to comment that the San Francisco Bernal property is not close to BART stations. It's about 3 miles down the freeway and not close to anything at all. There are great difficulties in trying to develop redevelop a piece of property that's not a greenfield. And across the freeway from us in Dublin, they had thousands of acres of open land that they got to create a specific plan for and develop. In Pleasanton's case, we have North Pleasanton and the Hacienda Business District. And, you know, when those were approved by the people, the understanding and the agreement was that there would be no residential housing in the Hacienda Business Park. When we came onto the city council, we amended the Hacienda Development Agreement to allow for hundreds and hundreds of units of housing and apartments within the business park. And today, there are virtually, no or seriously limited spaces that you could build high-density housing within the Hacienda Business Park. The problems with things like the business park is that we didn't plan it for families. We didn't plan it for kids. It's designed to move traffic around at high rates of speed. There are inadequate parks. There's no school facilities for the kids that might live there. Everything is impacted. The parents... that or people that would live in high-density housing near the BART station would have to get in their cars and commute and go to almost every place that they want to go because there's no grocery stores, there's no retail there.
I hear what you're saying. I want to hear what Richard Marcantonio has to say, though, about what's interfered here with smart growth from his perspective.
Yeah, I would take issue with the former mayor's statement. There's actually dozens of developable acres walking distance from BART in that Hacienda Business Park. And in fact, the city has selected three of those sites for housing, and what the judge ordered them to do was to move that process much more quickly than they had planned to. The point, though, is that what the city ought to be doing to address those concerns is, first of all, they need to be looking at mixed-use development. In other words, a mix of retail on the ground floor with residential above. They need to be, when cities often give up the most powerful tool that they have with developers, which is the right to build at higher densities, the right to build certain kinds of projects. The one of the earlier callers mentioned a court ruling that struck down inclusionary zoning in certain respects. Actually, anytime the city has something to offer the developer, they can require affordable housing. So what they should be doing is something like what the town of Corte Madera in Marin County is now doing. They're saying, if you give us 100% affordable housing at, you know, at this range of different income levels, then we're going to give you high density, we're going to give you, you know, reduced parking requirements, we're going to give you fee waivers and all these other things. That's what the developers need to move these projects forward, but the city should not be giving those away to developers who aren't going to provide what the community really needs.
And again, Richard Marcantonio is a managing attorney at Public Advocates. John King, can we get you on record here, maybe speculating a little bit with a final word about how this is likely to affect development around the state?
I would guess that if Pleasanton does not appeal, or if Pleasanton appeals and loses, that you will see some other cities really start to get nervous in terms of just how do we at least start loosening laws, because otherwise groups like Public Advocates will be looking for other lawsuits. And judging by the Superior Court's decision, the law is on their side.
And let me conclude with a couple of comments posted by you, our listeners, on our website. Lee writes, I get tired of hearing that this housing is for teachers and firefighters. There are no teachers or firefighters in affordable housing, and if your attorney guess will not attest to that fact, everything else he says is suspect. And Stephanie says, what's really interesting about Pleasanton's housing cap is that it not only broke the law, it was also a bad deal for city residents. New development is an important tool to make our cities and towns better places to live. We can all point to vacant lots and rundown abandoned strip malls in our communities that are both eyesores and missed economic opportunities. In my town, San Mateo, there's an aging Kmart store surrounded by a huge empty parking lot right next to a Caltrain station. Those are exactly the right types of places to encourage new growth, to revitalize the neighborhood, and provide new services for residents. Greenbelt Alliance's Grow Smart Bay Area research found that Pleasanton has plenty of underused land within city limits to accommodate the new homes it needs. And that will be a final word from one of our listeners. I want to thank Richard Marcantonio, managing attorney of Public Advocates, Tom Pico, former mayor of Pleasanton, and John King of the San Francisco Chronicle. And you, our listeners, wouldn't be here without you. And we're going to be with you for yet another hour. We're going to talk about Mark Twain in the hour ahead, and what happened to him before he became Mark Twain and was headed out west and lived in the Nevada and California, Nevada Territory and in California. With Roy Morris Jr. I want to extend thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.